short bugs.
You have princesses. You want to get in the doghouse,
don't you? All right, it's on. Yeah, 2nd and 3rd John, and, you know, of course, they're short books. They're actually the two shortest books in our Bible.
Hey, what's a short John?
No, we like short. Okay. Short people. Now, who was that guy? Randy Newman?
Oh, I'd put him
back
in the
doghouse. 70s. I like short people or something. All right. I don't even have my stuff. Here it is. We're doing I'm doing 2nd, 3rd John together for a couple reasons. Like I said, one is that it's they're short books. Doing one book in an hour, 2nd John, it could be done, but you know, I don't want to bore anyone or anything. So, but more importantly, they're both kind of about the same thing, and they really go good together. 2nd, 3rd John do. Well, I'll leave that up. Okay. All right, so look at our handout here. 2nd John, it's the book of fellowship. With truth, and I put that little table down there, because last week, you know, this first page is a lot of copy from last week when we did 1st John. The three letters of John all deal with fellowship. You know, last week we talked about it was fellowship with God and all the things that God wants us to know. And one of the most important things he wants us to know is that we are truly saved. He wants all of us to be sure of our salvation. And that's kind of the theme of 1 John. Whereas 2nd and 3rd John is about fellowship with truth and with other people and the truth that they're bringing into our life. So they do go good together. And I put the definition of fellowship, companionship with someone, being on equal and friendly terms. You guys can read that. Now, that little table there, the comparison of John's writings, I did add that this week. Because those are, remember, John wrote 5 books. And we're talking about the Apostle John, one of the early disciples. He was one of the first few called. Peter and Andrew were probably first. They were brothers. And then James and John were soon after. And so with John, we really see the journey from the, you know, the son of thunder that he starts out when he wants to put the flamethrower on the village. And he's a little more harder. And now he kind of evolves into the apostle of love toward these latter books. He's all about loving people, loving the truth. And not a lot is, you know, interestingly enough, not a lot is said of John, like in the book of Acts. There's really no sermons from John. Really all we have from John are these three letters where we really kind of see his heart. So that's a little table there. All right, so the book of John, 2nd John. This one was also written in that 70 to 80 AD time period when he was in Ephesus. Now remember, does anyone remember? Okay, yeah, we talked about this last week a little bit. At the cross, John gave Mary the custodianship. No, John gave...
Jesus gave John.
Yeah. Jesus gave John the custodian, taking care of my mom.
Yeah.
Take care of my mom. That was at the cross. Well, John and Mary stayed in Jerusalem for quite a while and helped Peter and James with that first church in Jerusalem. Well, something epic happened in Jerusalem that caused John and Mary to move and go to Ephesus. Does anyone know what that is? Tom?
The persecution of Christians involved in Rome.
Yes, Rome came down with their iron boot and destroyed Jerusalem. Good job. They destroyed Jerusalem and they destroy the temple. And the Jews have been without a temple ever since 70 AD. And that's why they're right now planning on building another one, a third one. So, When Rome came in and destroyed Jerusalem and the temple, Christians really, or the Jewish Christians really spread. Jews in general spread. They actually call it the diaspora today. They still talk about that. Right, anyway, John and Mary head to Ephesus around 70 AD, right after that happened. And remember, in Ephesus at this time, Timothy was the pastor. Ephesus kind of becomes the new central key city, like Brian's talking about, of the first century church. Ephesus, you know, started churches. Key people were living in Ephesus, including John and Mary. Timothy was a pastor. During the 70 to 80 AD time frame, as soon as John got to Ephesus, is when he wrote the Gospel of John, 1 John, 2 John, and 3 John. So John did his writings from Ephesus. It's kind of cool to think about, but when we think of the Gospel of John, that was the very beginning of our New Testament, he could have written the Gospel of John like the day before he wrote 1, 2, 3 John. We look at them as they're a long ways apart, but not really. He did all his writing there in Ephesus. So it's kind of cool to think about. All right, the 50,000 foot summary of this book. Why did John write it? Or the summary of it. To encourage believers to walk in truth as we've been commanded by Christ and be vigilant to avoid false teaching. So this is a popular theme with a lot of these books, is to walk in the truth and avoid false teaching. All right, next page, key verse in this little short book. John says, and this is love, that we walk after his commandments. This is the commandment that, as ye have heard from the beginning, ye should walk in it. Love people. He is the apostle of love now. You know, Paul kind of turned into the apostle of faith. Peter was the apostle of hope. And John was the apostle of love. So that was his key thing. Who is it written to? John wrote this letter to the elect lady and her children. And she likely had a church meeting in her house. So another historical fact. In the first century church, you know, all these churches we've talked about, Galatia, Philippi, and all these others, they all met in homes. And that's really the way the church was until around 300 AD, when Constantine brought in organized religion. So they all were meeting in homes. So 2 John was written to a lady that had a church in her house. Like, remember Lydia, Philippi. She had a church in her house. All right, so why was it written? Point E. John is commending this lady and her sister and her children for their obedience to Christ and loving others. And he's really warning her about the false teachers. And she gives her a measuring stick. He gives her a measuring stick on how to spot a counterfeit, how to spot a fake teacher. So then we'll talk about some of that. The interesting facts there in the on the handout there, those are pretty much copy-pasted from last week. Nothing really new. I've already said some of it. I always include a lot in these handouts because I never know where they're going to end up. So I didn't want to like not include it, and then if someone ends up with 2 John and they wouldn't see any of this. So that's why I kind of copy-paste some of this. But I did add that table at the bottom of the page. 2 John is one of five books in our Bible that are just one chapter. Well, these are the five one-chapter books. And you'll notice 2 and 3 John are the shortest books in our Bible by verse and word count. So it's kind of interesting. Yeah, Rosie?
Yeah, Coach. You talk about that Mary, Jesus gave his mom to John to take care of.
Yes.
But they don't mention his father.
Yeah, he's never really mentioned much outside of the very, very beginning of the gospel. So, you know, there's been speculation he died or he just wasn't important. But really, he's never mentioned after the very beginning.
I'm just curious. Mm-hmm. I was just curious because back then, you know, they didn't believe in divorce. Or divorce.
Yeah, it was a big deal.
They had it. You know, just like in the Catholic religion, you know, used to be.
Yeah.
You know, and certain other religions, divorce is not an okay thing.
Yeah, you had to have a really, really good reason.
Yeah, so
Jews
I'm just
did.
Curious. Okay.
Yeah, he's never really mentioned. So, yeah, John. And also, Jesus didn't give custodian of Mary to his siblings that he had.
Yeah.
Like
mm-hmm.
Jude, that we'll talk about next time, or James, or any of the others.
Yeah, because that's usually, you know, like, if,
yeah.
you know, say, God forbid something happened to Jimmy, you know, Kenny would expect, you know.
Yeah, the blood relative.
The next person to fill in, you know, as far as looking after me.
Yeah.
But even though I got to remind him I'm a grown adult.
Yeah.
We kind of have that little run around.
Yeah.
But, no comments out, peanut squats. He's just looking like inches over ice.
Yeah, exactly.
I'm just curious. Yeah,
yeah, he's not there.
And they never mentioned that he, you know, was killed in a battle or nothing?
No, nothing really. See, those are really kind of...
Oh, that answered my question.
All right, so next we got the timeline on the next page. Actually, while we're talking about shortest books, I just thought, like, does anyone remember... Okay. These are the shortest books in our Bible. Does anyone remember in our New Testament who wrote the most number of books?
Paul.
Paul wrote, does anyone know how many?
14.
14, the number of double blessings. Yes, there you guys go.
Okay.
Over there. All right, here you go, big day. All right, so I'll give you four. Paul wrote the most books. All right, who wrote...
The most words.
That's a good one. Mm. Who wrote the most of our New Testament?
Paul.
Was it?
Word-wise.
Luke. Yeah, Luke wrote Acts and the Gospel of Luke, which are both big books. So by word count, he wrote most of the New Testament. Just a little trivia to... Amazing friends. Yeah, I've had too many in my life. All right, so here's our timeline. We talked about next week. Nothing really new here. You know, John was Jesus. He gave Mary to John. He's in Jerusalem for a while. He goes to Ephesus. He writes the books. After he wrote these books, he was boiled in oil by the Romans and trying to kill him, but miraculously he didn't die. And they... put him on the island of Patmos, where he ends up writing the Revelation. So that's kind of the how things go. All right, so next, just quickly, the cast of characters in this book. It's a little... Actually, I'm not even there yet. First, we got the elect lady. This, you know, who's that? We don't know who she is. She's not named. We don't really know anything about her. We know that John loves her. We're going to read it here in a second, but John loves her. She's got a house because she has a church in it. There's no man mentioned again, so I don't know if these guys are running off or what, but there's no man mentioned. But she's allowing this meeting in a church, and she's a good, godly woman that's raising her kids in the truth. So that's one character, the elect lady. The next character is the elect sister is mentioned. This lady also has a sister that's probably part of the church. John loves her as well. And I think it's cool that John ministered with his brother James. You know, they were the sons of Zebedee, the sons of thunder, and now he's writing to this lady that is also ministering with her sister. So that's kind of cool. And the children are mentioned as being good kids, which I put less impressed. Not all kids are good. You know, there's a lot of bad kids in the Bible, so John's really encouraging her to rejoice that your kids are doing so good. And then you got the deceivers, these traveling teachers and prophets. Because what would happen is, and there's actually some good Greek writing. I didn't take any snippets out of it, but all these home churches that were meeting in these people's houses, there were a lot of like charlatans and swindlers and freeloaders that would want to be an evangelist, and I'm going to go travel around these home churches because they'll put me up for a few days, and I can eat and sleep. All I got to do is preach this message, and that's kind of, they were freeloading off of people. And even it was so bad that even the Greeks had noticed it, and they had wrote some plays about the charlatans and things like that. So 2 John is really addressed to this elect lady. That you love people and you're hospitable, but be careful about opening up your home to these freeloaders and false teachers just because they say they're bringing the gospel and they know the word. So that's really what the book's about. So, next page. which is what it's about. Just thought I'd do a few bullet points here. She's a godly woman. John knows. She's got a church in her house, probably in Ephesus. And she's allowing these guys to stay in her house. And John's warning her that they're going to take advantage of her hospitality. And he actually tells her things to look for to know whether or not someone's speaking the truth. Because the last bullet, she's got to protect her house, just like us. We have to be so careful about we allow into our house. I mean, we have the same problem that this elect lady would have had. All the internet, all the streaming, all the, our phones. I mean, we're just bombarded by false truth, you know, every day. It's just, we've got to be diligent to protect our family from that. All right, so now let's take a look at the book now. This is, luckily, this is a short enough book, we can just read it. So I thought it'd be fun just to read it. Would anyone want to read verses 1 through 6? That's kind of the first half. None. All right, I'll read it.
I wonder why he looks around like Bueller.
All right, the elder. Here he goes. The elder, which is John, he calls himself the elder, unto the elect lady and her children, whom I love in the truth. And not I only, but also all they that have known the truth. Everyone loves this lady. For the truth's sake, which dwelleth in us, and shall be with us forever. Grace be with you, mercy and peace from God the Father, and from the Lord Jesus Christ, and the Son of the Father, in truth and in love. See, I think that's four times he's mentioned truth. You know, I've always told you guys, you can kind of tell what a book is about by the word that's used over and over and over. So, truth is the key word in this book. And he's really telling her that, you know, we all love you, and she loves us. They're all loving each other in the truth. Anyway, I'll kind of leave that for now. It's all right, verse 4. I rejoiced greatly that I found of thy children walking in truth, as we have received a commandment from the Father. So your kids are doing good. Verse 5. And now I beseech thee, lady, not as though I wrote a new commandment unto thee, but that which we have from the beginning, that we love one another. That's the commandment. And this is love, that we walk after his commandments. That's how we do it. We obey him. This is the commandment that, as ye have heard from the beginning, ye should walk in it. So he's just really encouraging her that she's doing the right thing. And verse 7, he kind of switches gears. For many deceivers are entered into the world who confess not that Jesus Christ is come in the flesh. This is a deceiver and an antichrist. You know, I mentioned last week, John is the only writer that uses that word, antichrist. He uses it in several of his books. And he's telling her an anti is anything against or instead of, just like we use it today, that the best way to identify an antichrist, someone against Christ, is someone that confesses that he didn't come in the flesh, that he's not God in the flesh, which even today is the key thing you can look for in a cult or false teaching. Because pretty much any cult, Mormons, Church of Christ, Jehovah's Witness, not Church of Christ, Community of Christ. Got to be careful there. Yeah, I better not throw names out. But Community of Christ was part of the RDS. Jehovah's Witness, a lot of these, that Jesus wasn't God. So that's always the best way. Yeah, Church of Christ, that's no good. That's, they got another thing. Yeah, well, there's two types of heresy, and that's what's, it's good to know, the two types. There's a type that will keep you from getting saved, you know, like the Jehovah's Witnesses and things like that. That's heresy that will keep you from getting saved. Then there's heresy, once you are saved, that will keep you from doing anything. And that's this, the Pentecostal crowd and the emotional crowd. Yeah, they're saved, but they're not being all they can be for God because they've gotten caught up in this untruth. So there's two types of heresy. And he's telling her to look out for the first type that says Jesus isn't come in the flesh. All right, verse 8. So he's telling her to look to yourselves, you know, be careful, examine yourself, that we lose not the things which we have worked for, which we have wrought, but that we receive a full reward. So he's telling her to be careful because there's some things at stake. We're not just avoiding false teaching because it's false. There's some things to lose, and we'll talk about that. I listed them out in the handout. Verse 9, whosoever transgress and abide not in the doctrine of Christ, which is the body of the gospel, there all the things that, about Jesus and the teaching, hath not God. He that abides in the doctrine of Christ, he hath both the Father and the Son. So that's kind of 1 John speak he's doing there. All right, verse 10, if there come any unto you and bring not this doctrine, receive him not into your house, neither bid him Godspeed. So don't let this guy in. Don't feed him. Don't help him. Don't enable him. Because he's just going to go down the street and corrupt your neighbors, corrupt your community. So that's really a good verse that you could apply for a lot of things about enabling people to do bad things. You know, so it's kind of a cool little verse there. And actually, a lot of the old-timers would not, you know, if a Jehovah's Witness came to the door, you know, slam the door in her face, don't let them in their house, very mean to them. A lot of it's from this verse here, that you're not even to, you know, wish them well. So, anyway, verse 11. For he that bideth him Godspeed is a partaker of his evil deeds. You're enabling this guy to corrupt people. So verse 12, he kind of closes out now. Having many things to write unto you, I would not write with paper and ink, but I trust to come unto you and speak face to face, that our joy may be full. The children of the elect sister greet thee. So that's the book. We read a whole book. Very simple book. He's just writing to this lady, hey, you're letting people into your house you shouldn't be letting in. You need to not do that because there's things at stake. And we'll talk about that. But, all right, so the outline of the books there, the next little section, that's just the high level. It's a greeting. First part commends her for walking in truth and gets on her about standing against, you got to stand against these guys. You know, one of the things that's tricky with cults, I've mentioned this before, is how they use the same words we use. And it can be very frustrating dealing with false teachers and false truths. They use the same words we use. Yeah, I'm saved. I have Christ in me. But they have a different dictionary of what that means. And that's where so we have to know our own definition of it and try to pin these things down. So,
Jim, what was Jay? It's all about the...
All right, so that's the next part. I was going to get sassy, you know, it's all about the... you know, no fakers. I was trying to think, well, it'd be no trouble. Anyway, it's all about the truth. That's what 2 John is all about, is the truth. You know, because truth, you know, it's absolute, and it's absolute. I mean, we all know God's word is absolute, and there's tons of verses. You know, and I program. I mentioned this last week with the if-then statements in 1 John. It means something to me. I write programs on computers, and computers are all about truth. They do what you tell them to do. You know, if you get a virus, you actually told it to do that because you did something that you shouldn't have done, but it did what it is intended to do. Computers do exactly what we tell them to do because they're it's absolute truth. I don't know where I was going with that, but they're absolute truth. That's what I think of with computers. And that's the way the word is here. All right, so the truth's not hidden. And that's another big one. I mean, God's truth is not hidden from us. I mean, many times, you know, if you want to know the word, you pray, he'll show it to you. I honestly believe, I don't know if I ever mentioned this, but, you know, I've always been I feel so blessed that I was able to be exposed to good truth early on in my Christian walk. You know, I went to the temple right out of the gate. I had no idea how blessed I was to be exposed to good teaching in this church here. And then some people aren't. I feel sorry for them. I don't know where I'm going with this either, but I just feel like if someone genuinely wants the truth, God will lead them to it. And then it's up to them to drink and take advantage of it. So that's the way I look at it for my life. I was really wanting the truth. and I was led to a good church, and I've been exposed to it my whole life. Now I kind of take it for granted, but there are very few churches in this city, and I've told Brian Hedges this, there's very few churches in this city where we can learn the truth, as we're taught here at this church. So it's very special. All right.
Jim, do you hear what that couple said about the churches in, was it California?
No, Chris
says, yes.
Yeah, whenever we were setting up for the wedding, we got to know Chris Cohen's in-laws or that live out in California. And they were telling, they're good Christian people from here, from this Harrisonville area. And they were just telling us about the spiritual climate in California. And it was just so depressing. Like, wow, you know, this is so apostate and no truth. And so yeah, I'm just thankful for this. I'm thankful for this church. All right, so I got to move on here. So truth is authoritative. Talks about some things about truth. But my key point on this is that a lot of folks will allow their experience or their opinions to be their truth instead of the absolute, you know, Word of God. And even when you show them the truth in here, they still reject it because they just have been taught something else and they're not willing to be retaught. So, truth. It's all about truth. All right, so next, kind of shift gears a little. I was trying to think of a good way to illustrate 2 John. And what I thought of was the old corn maze. You know, it's corn maze time of year. So here's what 2 John, to me, is teaching. So now whenever I see corn all week, I've been thinking of 2 John. Whenever you go into a corn maze, they'll typically give you a map on how to get out. There's only one way. So that's, you know, the Lord Jesus is the way of us to get out. And when you get out, you get the prize, you get the inheritance, you get the promise, you get out. Just like our walk. All right, now the corn is tall. You can't see over it. As long as you're on the path, walking in the light and love of the truth, you can see and you have light. The corn would be like truth on both sides of you. It'd be like the biblical principles that I talked about a few weeks ago that keep us safe. So you're walking in your life, you walk in your life and you're bound by the principles that are in the Word, the truth. And as long as you stay there, you're okay and you're going to get out and you're going to be prosperous and all those things. Now, the problem is we hear people on the other side, or you think you see something on the other side that looks like a better deal. So in order to get over there, you've got to cross that truth. You've got to compromise it, break through it, and do something you're not really supposed to be doing to get on another path, which is a dead end, because all the other paths are dead ends. So you've got to get back onto your path. And then while you're crossing over, the corn's over your head and you're not in the light anymore. You're in darkness. Yeah, so that's why I look at 2 John like a corn maze. Actually, 2 and 3 John. There's this path that we need to stay on, bound by truth, biblical principles, heading for the promise. So we got principles and promises coming up again. So, because there's a, so I thought that was cool. And you guys have heard of the ecumenical movements that are going on right now? It's always in the news. An ecumenical movement that's been going on really since the 50s is different faiths, like, you know, our Catholics and our friends and Jews and Muslims, and they're all wanting to come together for peace, for love. We all love each other. We're all people. Let's all come together and love. But they're all from these just wildly different faiths. And so they're all just busting down this corn, trying to make things work that shouldn't work. And that's what the ecumenical movement is. It's whenever, you know, Christians meet with the Pope and they meet with the Muslims, they all get together to try to bring peace. It's not going to work. They're just busting down their corn maze. All right. So what's at stake? Point number I, is it? No, it's L. It's L. You know, 1 John was all about all the things God wants us to know. He used that word like 40 times in the book of 1 John. You should know you're saved. You should know the truth. You should know Jesus. You should know lots of things. Second John, he reminds us that we can lose a lot, that everything that we've, our reward. And I wanted to make sure this is different than our salvation. When you accept Christ and ask him in your heart and he saves you and you know you're saved, that's one thing. That's good. It's awesome, of course. Well, now you begin this journey working on your rewards and your inheritance, your life with Christ. And those are the types of things that we can lose if we get off the path of walking with him. And I've listed seven of them here. It's kind of interesting. Our testimony is one of the first things we lose. When we start going our own way and start walking outside of truth, we're going to lose our testimony. And that passage there in Genesis is when Lot finally decides he's going to do what's right, his family just laughs at him because he has a terrible testimony. He's lost it. He's blown it with all the silly things he did. We can lose our health. You know, that's the passage in 1 Corinthians when they were partying at the Lord's Supper, which we're going to do next week. Not a party, but...
Oh, okay.
They were partying at the Lord's Supper, and Paul says, hey, you guys better knock it off because some of you are already sick because you're not taking this serious. So next Sunday's our Lord's Supper, so we've got a week to really get ourselves confessed up and ready for that. Number three, the rewards. You know, I've said many times, we're all marching toward the judgment seat of Christ. I mean, the day when we die, we go stand before him, not as a judge of our sin, that's already been done, but he's going to want to know, what did you do with what I gave you to further my kingdom? Did you just set on it your whole life? Which is what some of those parables are about. Our inheritance, we can lose. We've got a big inheritance planned out in the millennium and beyond. That's what Colossians talks about. Our joy. Whenever you bust through your corn maze and you're walking on another path, a dead-end path, you're not joyous anymore. You're joyous when you're walking in the light with him. And our assurance of salvation. We talked about that last week. When Christians start doubting their salvation, it's generally because they're either in sin or they're off this path. It was for me anyway. I used to struggle with my salvation all the time. And when I would get honest, it's usually because I'm not being obedient and walking on the path I should be on. And our life. Yes. Paul, there in 1 Corinthians 10, Paul's recounting the story back in Numbers that you may remember when God wiped out like 30,000 people for having a sinful life and just fornicating and partying. God finally had enough and just wiped them out. That's what that was about. All right, so those are some of the things we can lose. That's what he kind of references in verse 8 when he says, look to yourselves that we lose not the things we have wrought. So we don't want to lose that. So, it's wrapping up 2 John. Three things we can learn from the book. Are you an elect lady? Well, that was funny. Now, you know, that's kind of cool too because the word lady, the Greek roots of the word lady, what it started out meaning was like a princess. A lady was a young lady in the castle that was like married to the dukes and the earls or whatever. They were princesses, lady. They were women of high esteem and greatly, you know, admired. So, and that's kind of the way we use it today. A lady is a very, you know, woman of distinction. So this elect lady, you know, like I say, she had a home. There's no mention of a man, so she must have been a good, strong lady. God-fearing, taught her kids well. And basically John is just giving her counsel on how to keep on keeping on. You know, protect your house, protect your kids. And that's where I put it. As spiritual leaders of our families, it's very important that we teach them to walk in the truth, just like she did. All right, how to spot a deceiver. You know, like I say, it's our job as parents. I mean, we're all the elect lady in our church, in our homes. We've got to protect our kids from these bad influences. I mean, even Disney.
Sorry, Jim. I'm just imagining you and Steve as ladies.
Well, yeah.
Sorry, there's a middle image.
The wisdom is a woman, and we have wisdom.
Jim, so, don't dig yourself any further than that hole.
I mean, the world is so deceitful. Like, you know, I work at AMC, and I see all these trailers, and I see Disney comes out to our place all the time. And
I know. I'm believing. I respect you both. It was
just a little tutu. There's just wicked stuff these guys implant in these Disney movies. You know, it's. But anyway, so yeah, we've got to really be on guard. All right, so John gives us this measuring stick. Mainly is that Jesus is God is the primary way you can tell, you can identify a false teacher. Is Jesus God? You know, like the witnesses. I hate to pick on them, but I used to work with a Jehovah's Witness, and we went around for years. And he would want to take me around and talk about the 1,044 and the lion laying down with the lamb and all the side issues. But the real issue is, who's Jesus? Jesus is God. So all that other stuff they're talking about doesn't matter. Because I already know he's false. So anyway. And then the last one there, the personal touch. You know, I like the way at the end, actually both these letters, he said, hey, you know, I got a lot of things to tell you, but I'm going to see you face to face. And I thought that's pretty cool that in this day of electronics and wizardry that goes on, you can't beat face-to-face communication. You know, so I thought that's cool. That is joy may be full. So that's 2 John. John writes to this woman's church, you're doing good, keep the bad guys out. Any questions on 2 John? All right, let's dive into 3 real quick. Need to speed this one up. 3 John, pretty much a duplicate of on the first page anyway. Written at the same time. Technically, this is the shortest book because of word count. The 50,000-foot summary at the bottom of the page. To encourage the believers to extend hospitality and fellowship to true teachers of the word. It's kind of a continuous of 2 John. He's still talking about false teachers. Because they, you know, it's interesting how they sprung up right out of the gate. I mean, remember the book of Galatians. Really, every book John, or every book Paul wrote, he addressed these guys. I mean, they were everywhere, ever thick as thieves. All right, so next page. Key verse in John, 3 John. Beloved, follow not that which is evil, but that which is good. He's just exhorting this guy. It's written to a guy named Gaius. We'll talk about that in a second. He also had a home church, more than likely. Why was it written? Point E. He's encouraging his fellow laborer Gaius regarding this bad apple, Diotrephes. This is one of my favorite characters in the Bible, Diotrephes. I couldn't wait to get to 3 John, actually, over the last couple years, because I like this guy. Interesting facts. That's pretty much all the same. That is John. Those are our books at the bottom. All right, so let's flip over. Same timeline. All right, cast characters is where we get into 3 John. We got a different set of characters in this book, of course. We got a guy named Gaius, which his name means I'm glad. He's also a fellow laborer. John loves him. He may have been sick. I'll show you that verse when we get there. We got Diotrephes. His name means nourished by Jupiter. He's our bad guy of 3 John. He's our bad guy in your life, in my life. We all have Diotrephes in our lives. I actually list out a bunch in mine. He tells us to, and then 3 John, he says, remember his deeds. So I remember their deeds. And then we got Demetrius. He's a good guy, too. So Demetrius and Gaius are our good guys. Diotrephes is our bad guy. So what's this book about? 3 John. In this book, John writes a letter to the church, Diotrephes' church. Diotrephes is a believer, apparently. Diotrephes has a church in his house. But Diotrephes is a goof, and he's a prideful, dominant guy that's like, he's doing what Paul's lording over his flock, I think is the way Paul put it. And then we'll talk a little more about him. But so John writes a letter to Diotrephes, probably tells him to check his heart. Well, we don't have that letter, but that letter is referenced in 3 John. Diotrephes rejects that letter. He doesn't want any counsel from John. He doesn't like John. So then John writes to Gaius, which is 3 John. And so he's kind of going to Gaius now and saying, hey, you're doing a good job. But you got to watch Diotrephes because he's a bad apple. And that's what 3 John is. So John tells Gaius, stay away from him. But Demetrius is a good guy that we should be following. So we're not sure if Demetrius was a member of Diotrephes' church. Maybe John is recommending a coup. Get Diotrephes out, put Demetrius in. Kind of seems that way, but we're not real sure. But Demetrius is another good guy. So that's what it's about. So let me read it real quick. Then some of this will make sense. All right, so it starts out, the elder again. John says he's the elder. Under the well-beloved Gaius, who I love in the truth. Beloved, I wish above all things that thou mayest prosper and be in health, even as thy soul prospers. All right, now that's a cool verse. I've actually got it later. But what he's telling Gaius there, I pray that your physical health would match your spiritual health. So it's like Gaius may be sickly or something. And what a cool prayer that is, that your spiritual health would match your physical health. A lot of us, me included, I'll put sometimes more emphasis on my physical health than my spiritual health. And how good, and so just think about your own spiritual health. If you were to ask God to make your physical health as good as your spiritual, would that be good or bad? You know, and a lot of times for me that would be bad. I'm putting more on, I'm ignoring my spiritual health. I'm starving myself by not eating right. So my physical health would be bad. But anyways, I think that's a neat little prayer he does for Gaius. All right, so let me pick it up. Verse 3. For I rejoice greatly that the Taboras are here. Yeah. We're reading 3 John right now. We're going to read the whole book. All right, so verse 3. For I rejoice greatly when the brethren came and testified of the truth that is in thee, even as thou walkest in the truth. I have no greater joy than to hear that my children walk in the truth. My children. Usually when these guys use that phrase, my children, it's their spiritual children. You know, Paul, Timothy, Peter, Mark. Just like us, we should be happy when the people we're discipling are walking in the truth, not just our physical kids. All right, so verse 5. Beloved, thou dost faithfully whatsoever thou doest to the brethren and to strangers. He's hospitable. He helps everybody. Verse 6. And these people have borne witness of thy charity before the church, whom if thou bring going forward on their journey after a godly sort, thou shalt do well. He takes these people in. He's helping people. He's doing the same thing the electric lady, the elect lady's doing. She was electric, had electric boots. Anyway, verse 7. Because that for his name's sake they went forth, taking nothing of the Gentiles. He's talking about how Paul would minister. We therefore ought to receive such, that we might be fellow helpers to the truth. So he's really commending Gaius for being the good guy, hospitable. He opens up his house, just like the elect lady. All right, here's where it turns on verse 9. All right, John says, I wrote unto the church, but Diotrephes, who loveth to have preeminence among them, received us not. So he rejects that letter that he sent. In verse 10, wherefore, if I come, I will remember his deeds, which he doeth, prating against us. Prating is talking, you know, backstabbing against us with malicious words. And not content therewith, he's not happy just with that, neither does he himself receive the brethren, the good guys. He forbids them that would and casts them out of the church. So, he not only keeps the good guys out, if the good guys do come in and some of his people like them, he kicks them out. He wants no one in his church to have anything to do with the good guys, John's people. So yeah, Diotrephes, he's no good. Beloved, this is John, verse 11, follow not that which is evil. So that's Diotrephes is evil. But that which is good. He that doeth good is of God. He does evil, hath not seen God. Now Demetrius, he has the good report. So here's the good guy. Follow him. He's got a good report of all men and of the truth itself. Yea, and we also bear record, and ye know that our record is true. I had many things to write, but I will not with ink and pen. I will not write unto thee, but I trust I shall shortly see thee. We shall speak face to face. Peace be unto thee. Our friends salute thee. Greet thy friends by name. So that was his little warning. So you're doing good. You're letting good people in. You're helping the strangers. You're hospitable. Diotrephes is a wicked man. Stay away from him. And follow Demetrius instead. Or look to Demetrius. So that's what the book is about. Kind of the same as the elect lady. Similar theme. They're not named in the second John, but they are in third. So, all right, so the next page, I got the table. I got the outline. Just a quick little outline. It's basically about, it revolves around these three men, which, with all people in the Bible, they represent character types. This is basically a character study. We've got the Gaiuses. You know, and that column there lists Gaius's types. Well-beloved, he's a helper of God's work. Has good testimony. And I like the way he said of the brethren too, not just inside the church. He has a good testimony outside the church. You know, we can all kind of put our Christian faces on when we come here, but how are we at work tomorrow? Do we still exhibit those same character? And Gaius did. He was a good guy. He had a good testimony with the unsaved as well. He's hospitable. He's all these good things. We should be thankful to have a Gaius. And then we got Diotrephes. Oh, yeah, look, you know, I do notice up here, I wanted to point out, the word preeminent, he calls Diotrephes preeminent. That was the theme of Colossians, I think it was 1:18, when it calls Christ as the preeminent one, or Christ, preeminence of Christ. Christ should always be the preeminent in our life. And with Gaius, he wanted to serve the preeminent one. Diotrephes wanted to be the preeminent one. He wanted to set himself on the throne, and he wanted to be the man. He wanted to be the guy everyone comes to for answers, Bible questions, whatever. He was lording over his little church to be the guy. He wanted to be the preeminent one. And then I list all his qualities. Oh, he wants authority, he wants praise, prideful. And these are all qualities, at least for me, that are natural for me. I have a Diotrephes in me. Maybe that's why I like this guy. I identify with him. If I don't keep myself in check, I would be a Diotrephes. I would hinder God's word. I would be prideful. So, instead of looking around and thinking of people at HBF who might be a Diotrephes, kind of what we all should look within. Am I a Diotrephes? Sometimes I am. Sometimes I'm a Gaius. Demetrius is a good guy that he's encouraging people to follow. Not a whole lot said on him, but one thing I did want to say, this is something that's kind of cool. Because I was reading about the Nobel Peace Prizes. Okay, we all know the Nobel Peace Prize comes out every year. They got different categories. I don't know if you've ever heard how that got started. It's really interesting. It reminds me of this, of examining myself. Alfred Nobel was a guy, he invented dynamite, actually, back in the 1800s. I don't remember what year, but he invited, man, I can't really talk today. He invented dynamite. And he became like the world's leader in explosives, and he was inventing cannons, and he thought he was doing it good in order to keep countries, you know, defenses up to keep peace. So, and he became very wealthy. Well, toward the end of his life, his brother died. And I don't know his name, but the newspapers thought it was Alfred that died. So they wrote a big obituary about him. So the guy actually got to read his own obituary. And it was full of stuff like, you know, he was the merchant of death. You know, he enabled war, and he was the maker of the war machine. And it really bothered him to think about him being that way. So he, just like the Scrooge, he completely flipped his life around. And he gave all of his money to give out to these prizes for peace. He wanted to change his reputation. So that's what I think about with Diotrephes, because like I said, I would be a Diotrephes, so I got to think about, I don't want to be thought of that way. None of us do. So just like Alfred Nobel, just always take inventory. Am I Gaius? Am I Diotrephes? Am I Demetrius? So that's kind of how the book speaks to me. Because Diotrephes is bad. I've run across a few in my life. I've been saved 30 years. And I try to remember their deeds. And I actually put their names in my Bible. Kind of code, so no one knows who they are. But. All right, so on the next page. Comparing the three letters of John. This is just a high level. You know, John wrote these three, 1st, 2nd, 3rd John. In 1st John, he's totally anonymous. He doesn't mention, he's not an elder. It's just, there's nothing. The only way we know he wrote it is because of his buddies, Polycarp and Irenaeus and some of the guys that hung with him. 2nd, 3rd John, he calls himself the elder. 1st John's written to all believers and the elect lady and Gaius. On the names, there's no names at all in 1st John. No reference to people, really. 2nd John's anonymous, this elect lady. And then he actually names in 3rd John. And then the position on truth is kind of cool. It's hard to document in a way. But 1st John was just a general warning about false teaching. Whereas 2nd John, it got more personal in telling her not to associate with these false teachers. And he gives an example of what they believe. Whereas in 3rd John, he does. He names. Diotrephes is a wicked man. Don't deal with him. And he's even, and he's a professing believer, which is kind of interesting. He's not a heathen. All right, then 1st John, truth and heresy were defined for us. And then in 2nd John, he warns her about keeping her out of her house, keeping the false truth. And in 3rd John, he really commends Gaius for allowing it in. So, you know, it's kind of like I think of a firewall, you know, networking. But, you know, one book he says it's good to keep him out, and the other book it's good to let him in. So it's kind of the two positions that he's taken there. Guarding the truth is a key theme in all of his letters. Not to let it into our life. So that's a simple little book. Now the last page, three things we can learn from this book. We should fellowship with those who are following Christ. It goes without saying. That's into the... he's warning Gaius to stay clear of Diotrephes. And that's something that as Christians we don't want to do. There are some people and influences that, as we know, we've got to keep at arm's length from us because they're going to harm us or our kids. I don't think I put your hand out. One of my favorite verses is Romans 16:17, dealing with this, is that Paul's telling these people that, I beseech you, brethren, mark them which cause division and offenses contrary to the doctrine which ye have learned, and avoid them. I mean, we're to have brotherly love, but we also got to protect ourselves. And that's kind of what he's telling Gaius here. And then the second point is what I mentioned on the spiritual health, that our physical health is tied to our spiritual health. Sherry talked about this a little yesterday, how when you're worrying and fretting over things, you'll get an ulcer. So your spiritual health affects your... I don't even know if I said it right. Physical health. Mm-hmm. Yeah, and there's a lot of verses. I mean, tons of verses that talk about spiritual condition. Like in Exodus 15:26, God's telling them, you obey me or you're going to get diseases. You know, 17:22, I don't have time to get that. That was a good story. But a merry heart's like a medicine. You know, Proverbs are full of, you know, weariness in man will make him stoop. There's a lot of good verses that compare your physical health to your mental condition, spiritual condition. So, and that's where I put the last in bold. Would you want your physical health to be as good as your spiritual health? If your spiritual health is in the tank, you need to work on it. Feed it right. Get it what it needs to grow. And then where your arrows land. I always like the way the Bible compares children to arrows. that we should prepare them for flight, do everything we can to get them ready to go out, but they're not tested until we actually bing and they fly out there. And then wherever, you know, so, and in both these books, the kids were doing good and doing what's right. And it's not just physical children, it's our spiritual children too. So anyway, that's kind of some things I learned out of 2nd and 3rd John. Very cool books, short books. They're just about truth, keeping it out, letting good stuff in. Any questions? None?
None. All right, we just got 30 seconds. Everybody remember, Leo and Amita, we're going to meet next week. We're going to be over, we're not going to be in here.
Yeah.
Room 107. Did anyone want to share anything that they learned this morning? Anything that you feel like God taught you this morning? What do you think? Honestly, for me, I wasn't sure. When it says the elect lady, in my mind, I'm thinking he's talking to the church. So you're saying it's in
Well, yeah, I didn't mention that. A lot of people, you can spiritualize it. Yeah. The elect, typically, actually, it's to Israel, these last few books. But it could be the church.
So that's kind of interesting to me, that the lady with church in her home. Anything else, anybody?